I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Dear.
I was reading this article the other day about happiness.
Oh.
I know. And apparently
they
have been doing all this research about the nature of happiness.
Okay.
And here's what they found. Happier people are people that are more inclined to take risks. People that are more inclined to get uncomfortable and who are naturally curious. And so, like, for example, you're going to, because here's the thought process is that here's what it says. It turns out that activities that lead us to feel uncertainty, discomfort, or even a dash of guilt are associated with some of the most memorable and enjoyable experiences of their lives.
Gosh, I'd have to get it. That would be an interesting exercise to go through a Rolodex of your brain and figure out the things that, like, are memorable to you. And
right. You like, know. We went on this. Okay, so we... So Heidi and I took a tour of Monument Valley, right? And it's out in the middle of the desert somewhere. I can't remember if it's Nevada Utah or Arizona. I honestly don't know where we were at the time. And, you know, we decided, because the resort wanted, like, an obscene amount of money for you to be able to, like, fly there and take this tour. And so we were like, we're renegades. And, you know, because I always feel dumb. I feel like people think, like, you have money, so you're a fool, right? And so then I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to figure this out on my own. So we like, find this little company that does these tours. And we say, like, oh, can you do a little private tour for us? To make a long story short, we find ourselves in 109 degree weather and an open outdoor back end of a pickup truck in a frickin' absolute sandstorm. Because apparently it's monsoon season, just so you know out there. So storms whip up out of nowhere, but you're in the desert, so it's a sandstorm. It's in my eyes, it's in my teeth, we've got our shirts up over our heads, we can't breathe. And the little tour guy doesn't speak much English. And he's inside the pickup truck from 1974 that has a loudspeaker on it. And he's trying to, like, talk to us because it's a tour. Like, this is for, you know, it's a tour bus.
Oh, it's a tour bus pickup truck.
So, and he's telling a story that we can't understand anything he's saying. And he's got this thing where he repeats the last two words of every sentence. So he's like, then here with Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda. His name was David. I can't breathe, right? I'm hysterical. I'm like, oh, my God, Fonda. Oh, God. It's in my ears. I'm pulling clumps of dirt, red dirt out of my ears. Like, he stops at this lookout point because he's just following the, right? Following the route. And he gets out and he sits there. And I mean, I'm not, when I tell you you can't see your hand in front of your face, I mean, you cannot see your hand in front of your face. And I was like, David, this is good. We can turn around. And he comes and just sits in the back and just smiles at us. And I was like, David, we can go. David, get in the car and drive us back to shelter. David, right? Like, he doesn't, it was just, then I was like, oh my God, because David was looking at me weird. I was like, David's going to kill us out here, actually. David's a killer. But it turns out that David wasn't a killer, but I thought for sure because he was a little strange. And he, like nothing about, like, the monuments and the Navajo Indians
but
and, like,
Peter Fonda.
Peter Fonda. And then he's, like, telling a story because one of the buttes is named, like, Merrick something, like the monuments.
Yeah.
And he's like, two soldiers, Merrick and Mitchell. They got in trouble and, you know, they got caught and don't you do this again. But then bodies never found. Never found. And I'm just like, what is he talking about? And it was the most miserable. So we get back, right? So the little manager of Amangiri shows up to pick me up, right? And he had tried to talk me out of this. And I was like, I'm no fool. And hey, I looked at him.
His name, your fancy help plane ride.
His name was Jade. And I was like, Jade, how much do you enjoy I Told You So's? And he kind of looked at me blankly like I was going to tell him we had the time of our life. But meanwhile, I've got dirt in every wrinkle of my face, my scalp. It's clogging my eardrums. It's in my nostrils. I'm like, boulders are falling out of my nose. I mean, and I recounted the story, and he just took us back to the hotel, and just like they, you know, he's like, I want to comp you guys a little spa treatment. We were a mess, but it was a disaster. Like, just another one of my epic disasters. And Heidi was like, why is it on every vacation there's always something that we go in? And of course, because it was monsoon season, can you imagine being in like a little puddle jumper? I was ready to die. I'm turning green. I'm going to vomit in the plane. You know, you're praying for death, a quick, fast death, and the plane's like slamming it. You know, you're slamming your head because, like, you know how bad turbulence is in one of those little planes?
I've been in a big plane with bad turbulence.
Oh my God. And it's like, it's a windstorm.
Yeah.
And like, there's lightning going on. And I'm like, excuse me, to the pilot. I was like, shouldn't we not fly in this? He's like, well, we're up now. I swear to God. And it's like, it's always something for us. But nevertheless, I looked at Heidi and was like, this could have just been a luxurious and beautiful experience looking at monuments and rock formations. But now, this is a dinner story.
This is true.
I was like this, and, you know, if I had gone into greater depth about David the tour guide, I mean, but it's like, you know, we'll never forget it. Never.
No.
And so maybe, you know, stories of like food poisoning and, you know, foreign countries and adventurous meals and disasters. But those things are like, you know, what is it? Tragedy is comedy plus time.
Mm.
Comedy is tragedy plus time. Something like that. And Woody Allen. But I mean, it's true. Like, some of the most memorable moments of my life, or the most amazing rewards, or the spoils, have been after tremendous risk. So even when things go wrong, even when you're uncomfortable, even like, even on the tour when it's like, oh my God, it's like, you know, a birthday party that I'm having every week. But like some of the greatest moments of my career were being on that stage talking with the audience, mm-hmm. you know, especially the VIP Q&A, which was the most, only 100, you know, a couple hundred people. And
it's like, you never knew what was coming at you.
Like Yeah. And like being able to dialogue now and like literally talk back conversations. Like some of the best moments of my career were that tour, despite the fact that it was hard and uncomfortable and it was like on the road for 8 weeks. And I mean, so some of the most amazing things come out of discomfort, risk, and but you got to be willing to sort of throw yourself into the fray.
But it's interesting they equate that with happiness, because look how happy you were telling that story.
Oh,
look how
we were miserable when it was happening.
But just listening to it made me happy. You know what I mean?
It's like, ridiculous.
It's interesting.
Oh my God. And here's what they say. Curious people generally accept the notion that while being uncomfortable and vulnerable is not an easy path, it is the most direct route to becoming stronger and wiser.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows you to achieve your highest psychological peaks of evolution, so to speak. It evolves you as a human being.
Sure.
Even when we, you know, it gives like an analogy of Ethiopian food and how like you've never tried Ethiopian food before and you might not like what's in your quote injera or your wat, but you might uncover like a surprising dessert or food that you love that becomes a staple that you want to share with friends. And like, I'll never forget the first time Heidi and I went to Japan, you know, and back in the day, there was no, in Japan, like, there was no English on anything. It's not like you could get a map and get out and look at a street sign. It was all in, you know, kanji, whatever characters. You can't read it. So, you know, we wouldn't know what we were ordering. We wouldn't know what we were eating. Anyway, and like we discovered this thing called shabu shabu, which is like boiled food. And when you boil food, for some reason, it creates this scum on the top of the pot. Right? And it just looks disgusting. So, but it tastes like whatever. It's boiled food. But of course, the first thing we did was take all of our friends to downtown, to Japantown, for shabu shabu, just so we could watch their faces when the soap scum boiled up on top of the food. And, you know, and that was my greatest delight, I think, is like watching them all just like, is this supposed to be like this? Like, you know, but it makes a big statement that it's like, you know, remember that book, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran? It was big in the 70s. You ever read that book?
No, I didn't.
It's the quickest read ever. But it's an amazing book. And he pontificates on, you know, sorrow, joy, parenthood, sadness, loss, death. And in the book, I just remember it talking about balance. And he says something like, the same... your pain that carves out this trough of sorrow is also that much deeper to hold joy and abundance. Like he talks about how you can only know as much good as you can know bad. There's always a checks and balance of like sorrow and joy, risk and opportunity, you know, success and risk. And you're not going to, if you take that sort of middle ground and play it safe, like there's never going to be the high highs. So you might not get the low lows, but you're not going to get those high highs.
Right.
And it really just depends on what kind of person you are. But for me, like I'll take the bad if there's good any day of the week, as opposed to just sort of status quo. And Bruce Paul said it best earlier. He's like, I'd rather have loved and lost.
That's right.
I mean, than have played it safe. Yeah, you too can have David in a sandstorm.
Peter Fonda.
Yeah, this shot back to Future 3 here. Back to Future 3. Not kidding. Yeah, I have a video of it. I'll show it
to you.
Do you? I do. Yeah, I'll find it. It's on my phone somewhere. Fonda. I got it on tape. Here, it was Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda. You see?
It's Henry. Do it again.
It's Henry Fonda. Henry Fonda. Henry Fonda. Though, but you hear that rickety sound like that's us bumping around in the back of a bloody ass pickup truck in a sandstorm.
See, and look how happy you are, which makes your segment
that
absolutely
much
true.
I know.
Oh,
all right.
Bless you. Okay, we'll be right back. We are thrilled to have our very, very most favorite guest on today, our maybe most favorite expert on today.
Yeah. Dr. Van Hurley is here, world-renowned endocrinologist, best in the world, in my opinion. And, of course, my opinion matters more than anything else. But our credentials speak for themselves.
Thank you, Jamison, Jillian. That's so kind. But I'm not the best. I'm just one.
I think you're the best, Dr. V, without a doubt. But today, we're going to be talking about diabetes, actually.
Yep.
And Dr. V, first off, I think people get really confused about the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, which used to be called adult onset diabetes, but now it's called type 2 because kids get it as well, right?
That's 100% correct. So very like thumbnail sketch, type 1 diabetes are patients that make their immune system actually, unfortunately, somehow triggers that they make a protein, an antibody, that destroys the cells in the pancreas that make insulin. So unfortunately, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease.
Right.
The body turns on itself, and those folks are always insulin dependent. They have to be on insulin because they can't. Their beta islet cells are destroyed.
They can't make it.
We used to call it juvenile onset, like the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, all these JDRF, all these big organizations. But this can happen at any time in your life. Genetically, we don't understand, and that's what the research is about, the triggers of why does the immune system all of a sudden, what is in your DNA and your immunity environmentally, that triggers this so you destroy your pancreas, essentially, in terms of insulin production, because the pancreas does a lot of other things, like digestive enzymes and so forth.
Right.
So that's type 1, and you're on insulin. And by the way, a lot of our type 1 diabetics also now are on insulin, because they have to have insulin, but they actually go on tablets for what's type 2 diabetes. What is type 2 diabetes? Well, we call that the dysmetabolic syndrome or insulin resistance syndrome.
Right.
This is where you can make, your pancreas is making insulin, but because, again, genetically, and that's probably even more genes that really signify this, but you cannot any longer have that insulin working as well as it should.
You say that, genetically, but can't you create it from obesity?
So you hit the nail on the head, as you always do, Jillian, and that is environmentally, with obesity, not exercising, wrong foods, all these things, these genes can be kept in a box. But if you start gaining weight, if you get obese, if you're not moving, holy caroli, then guess what? Then these genes, and that's why type 2 is where the hope is, if you will.
Okay.
Because you can change this. You don't have to have this disease, and you can put it back in the box. Even the genetic box, actually, right?
Wow.
So type 2 is the obesity diabetes, and you're so astute when you said it was called the adult onset because guess what? People were honestly healthier, leaner.
Right. Yeah.
And now kids, the number one diabetes in children is no longer the autoimmune type 1. It's actually type 2, the obesity, to make it simple, diabetes.
Right.
And those folks, by the way, also have to go on insulin. In fact, we put them on insulin quickly to try and spare their little islet cells to make more insulin, like protect them, to take the burden off the islet cells in the pancreas. But it doesn't always work. So insulin or not doesn't designate type 1 or type 2.
Okay, got it.
So if we look at what's going on in summer, and that's why I think that this is a really important topic, and Janice, when you're asking us, like, what do we talk about in diabetes? Well, it's summer. And so I think it's an important topic to bring up. Why is summer different than other months? Well, because of environmental factors.
Okay.
Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So we don't walk around just as a person without being in our environment. It's really important, right?
Right,
of course. That means your social environment, your temperature environment, all the things, the foods, diet. I mean, I think the most important thing, Jill, that you and I always go through is that it's all factors together, right?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And the body is constantly responding to the stimulus that it's receiving from environment.
Exactly.
Right. I got it. Okay. And those things affect the expression of your genetics. Yes?
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Right. Okay. So that's probably what triggers. And what we're trying to do that's more refined, that doesn't sound like fancy science, is figure out what environmental triggers make a change. But
wow.
For today's call, what we're going to try and do is say, okay, if summer offers a different environment in terms of foods, temperatures,
right.
et cetera.
Okay.
What do we do?
Right.
What do you do if you're type 1 or type 2?
Right.
First thing, so number one, and again, in no order ever, top
right.
7 is just top 7 things
okay.
you got to think about. Dehydration. Now, why is that so important? You hear me say this all the time, but what we have to remember is when the sugar is high, meaning a fasting blood sugar
mm-hmm.
that is over 120,
okay.
for most folks, it's between 60 and about 80
right.
in the American scales. In Europe, they have different scales.
Because your insulin is working, and it's pulling the sugar out of the blood and getting it into the cells.
That's correct.
Got
and
it.
Sugar should not live in the blood. Sugar
right.
needs to be the little logs on the fire inside the cells.
Got it. Okay.
But when the sugars are high, guess what happens? It's like a bunch of little, I don't know, how do we say it? Like, you know, when you see water slides and you see all those donuts, like,
yeah.
and the kids are all jumping in the water slides and they're going down the slide.
Yeah.
That's what sugar molecules are. So it makes things flow. It causes what we call an osmotic push. So guess what you do? The kidneys pee out or want to make more urine.
Okay.
So with high sugars, especially in summer, what we see is diabetics get hospitalized more often
wow.
because their sugar isn't controlled. They're urinating because the sugar is pushing, like that water slide kind of effect.
Wow.
And those dehydration factors of high sugar make people more susceptible to everything from heat stroke to actually heart attacks and so forth.
Okay.
The volume gets low and people don't get it. So in the winter, if you're not also having, and we're going to talk about temperature changes, but if you're also not having that hard, hard, hot sun, and we'll talk about humidity, what you're doing is you're urinating more, and in the summer, you've got to remember as a diabetic, especially if you're not well controlled, you've got to remember you've got to drink more, because not well controlled means you're urinating out free water. That
okay.
means you're going to be susceptible to passing out, to heat stroke, et cetera.
Okay, got it.
So number one is hydrate, and I mean hydrate, like water is always the best. You know, we have coconut water,
mm-hmm.
people do the Gatorades, they have sugar-free Gatorades. I mean, we like water.
Okay.
Water is probably the best. Okay, number two, keep cool. Now, why do I say keep cool? Because that sounds, all these things are so simple, and we all think about them, but I actually mean keep cool. When we see, and especially in the summer, and if we look at different states in this country and all over, there's a high humidity. I was just in North Carolina with a patient traveling, and my goodness, it was so humid.
Yeah.
Basically what happened.
Stifling.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's really stifling and sweltering. So high humidity, like in Florida, in the East Coast areas
right.
especially, but also we get it on the West Coast. Sweat, when we make sweat to cool us down, it can't evaporate in that high humidity because the air.
Oh, so you're not effectively cooling down then.
Right. So when you sweat, you can't cool. And that's what people don't understand. Now, what makes that worse? And that's why I'm saying keep cool. What makes it worse is if you're not wearing cotton clothes.
Okay.
And by the way, a lot of my clothes have nylon and woven nylon and all that. But it's really important that in the summer, if you're going to go, let's say, to your fun park locally or to, you know, the day at the beach.
Yeah.
Honestly, do your best to wear cotton elements because the cotton will actually help you absorb that evaporated water or that water, that sweat.
Okay.
And it will cool you down. It functions, cotton, actually as a little radiator that cools you down.
Wow.
I know. Really interesting because people don't think about it. And what's really important about that is that what diabetics may experience if they don't cool down with cotton and with good hydration, one and two.
Right.
Jillian, they actually start getting fungal infections. Yeah. Women and men will get vaginal infections of fungi.
Yeah.
What do fungi like? They like folds of skin, moisture.
Yeah.
All the water sitting there that can't evaporate. Right?
I always have my contestants lather up with coconut oil because it prevents chafing and it's antifungal.
That's exactly right, and it's really important to do that. So you've just added one of the top sevens yourself.
Oh, I did? Look at me! I'm an overachiever.
We're going to be very explicit about this. So for men, you know, a jock itch, and then for, you know, that's basically in the groin area under those folds of, you know, the testicles and the penis. Yeah. Same thing for women, under the breast folds. You know, I mean...
Wow, you can get it under the breast folds?
Lift your breast up. Lift, you know, that little tummy.
I wish I had boobs big enough for that.
And as we get older, we call it in medicine a panis. Lift your little tummy up, look underneath. If you see red rawness, you need to get a fungal cream on there, and it means that you really have to be careful about wearing nylon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, number three, exercise. Now, exercise, we know you have to do. It's one of the key... So, so you can give yourself...
But does that work for type 1? Because I know for type 2, it helps you get the...
for both in the sense that... The insulin you're taking, even as a type 1 or a type 2 if you're taking insulin, works better. The doors of the cells open.
Of course.
It's like WD-40 of the cells. That's what exercise does.
Yeah.
And you got exactly to the heart of what I was going to say, Jillian, and that is when you give yourself an insulin shot, you might as well also go walk around your block twice to add to it.
Because so you can that's utilize like
it. It makes it better. It opens the cell doors. The minute you move, that we all move our skeletal muscle, our cell doors open. That means you need less insulin. That means your blood sugar goes down despite not having to have that biggest shot or take all the medications you take. Exercise is our freebie. It's like our walking version of insulin.
Yeah.
For all of us, by the way. For all of us, right?
Right. Yes, absolutely.
And the key in the summer, because this is diabetes in the summer, is that you've got to be careful about exercising in the day. And I know that's hard because a lot of, you know, moms and dads who are taking care of the kids, right? Like in the middle of the day, that's the time they're at camp or obviously during the school year, but it's also hotter out there. And that's a danger, especially for diabetics that we talked about that tend to be dehydrated.
Okay.
So we've got to do early morning or late evening, like dusk exercise.
Dr. V, I'm so sorry. I have another question.
Yeah.
And because you and I were talking before this segment about, you know, if you have a compromised immune system and how you need to be careful taking bacteria and this and that and the other. Well, okay. So if you get fungal infections, what my brain would automatically go to is, I want, you know, take probiotics so your body can fight these fungal infections.
Right.
Is it safe to take probiotics, though, if you have diabetes because your immune system is compromised?
Really good question. No longitudinal long-term outcomes study has been published to this effect. So in terms of evidence-based medicine, Jillian, I'm always honest with you about what we know in studies and what we don't.
Yeah.
We don't have a good study to show. But
really?
Okay. So now, anecdotally, what do we go by? What we've got to be careful with the probiotics is that they are live bacteria, the good ones, right?
Right.
So the idea is our body is full of bacteria. Our skin is, our colon is. I mean, we are born about 0% bacteria, and by the time we die, we're about 97% bacteria.
Right, right. Okay. 97. I thought it was 9 out of 10. It's 97.
It's super high. It's almost replaced. Like, we have become
not
a bacterial
human
culture media, and that's a good thing. Because bacteria, and it's called symbiosis, help us. I mean, bacteria signal and fight off the fungi, right? The fungal infections.
Yeah.
And viruses, by the way. There's like a little war, and bacteria become part of our immunity.
Right.
So if you take...
Because I take them every day. Now I'm like, oh, no.
If one takes probiotics, I always say for immune-compromised people, and those are patients, let's say, with cancer or uncontrolled diabetes.
Got it.
With other autoimmunity like lupus that isn't well-controlled, all these diseases means that something in your security system of your immune system isn't working well.
Okay.
You got to be a little careful when you start giving live bacteria because we don't know, are they always friends, right? What's already going on. So
I would
be careful with that.
Okay, so if you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes...
Uncontrolled.
You probably would... Do not take probiotics.
I think you can take it, but make sure your physician... or nurse practitioner or physician assistant, whoever's following you clinically, make sure they know.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
That's all I'd say.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. Please continue.
No worries. Okay. So number four, avoid alcohol and juices. And the reason I bring this up is because this is the signature of summer barbecues and fun.
Yeah.
All those drinks are pure sugar.
Yeah.
That's what they are. So it was interesting because I had a patient who actually was a lean type 2 diabetic, but really insulin resistant, meaning this gentleman needed huge amounts of insulin, actually, to keep his sugars down. And the guy walked, and he was doing his best, and we straightened it out. But one of the things he was talking about was juices and alcohol. And he thought that that was okay because it's a liquid. But remember, it's just, you might as well be drinking, you know, pancake syrup.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's
Coca-Cola, it's like, yep.
So
yeah.
Every time that you have either juice, and I'm not going to name the different companies, or any kind of alcohol, just think of, you know, that's another 200, 300 calories of pure carbs. The pancreas can't handle that if your sugar is already out of control, let alone when it is in control.
Right.
So you get this huge boost of high sugar, and the body doesn't like it. So with barbecues, you know, beer, wine, any alcohol, the sugar... It's just think, I'm drinking like a pure, you know, Coca-Cola. I'm drinking a soft drink. I'm drinking sugar.
Got it.
And I think people don't remember that in
right.
the summer, especially because they're having fun, of course.
So funny. When our kids went to a pool party and
right.
they've never had lemonade.
Right.
And all the moms, Heidi was like, honey, I've never been so uncomfortable because all the moms were like, your kids have never had lemonade. And she's like, why would we give our kids lemonade?
Right.
But it's like they don't see how bad that is. You know, it's like we do give them really, honestly, actually, no. Lou now thinks that Pellegrino is soda.
I know exactly the one, and our kids love it, too.
And then we'll give them like a little vitamin water zero.
Yeah.
And every once in a blue moon, I've like watered something down a little bit, but they don't. Anyway.
Well, we even when we do on our treats, OJ, guess what we do? Dilute it. Half
yeah,
half.
Dilute it. Right.
And this is OJ with calcium and vitamin D. And then you basically dilute it with nice water. And they don't. It doesn't matter. It's your palate. Train your palate. And so, again, alcohol and juices, you got to be super careful.
Right.
Bring up a really good point, Jillian, about training children early. It doesn't mean you have to be sort of absolutely military about it. But what you eat, and we've seen this in other studies, and this is a bird walk, but what you eat when you're young really becomes what your palate is accustomed to.
Wow. Okay.
It's really interesting.
Okay.
So if you eat veggies, if they're put in front of you, and I mean, you know, they're put in front of you, you eat them from little. I'm talking 6 months, 9 months, right?
Yep, that's
you
right.
You eat it. You know that that's okay.
Right.
And what we see a lot of people are doing now is, unfortunately, they're going on these kind of diets where they don't feed little children this, and this because of allergies. I actually personally disagree with it because
really?
Exactly what we talked about with immunity.
Wow.
Early.
Okay.
And your body will acclimate. Okay, next one. Number five, check your blood sugars more often. Really important for diabetics in summer.
Okay.
Because what they tend to do is they'll go on long, like we all, not they, all of us, we tend to go on picnics or have more fun and so forth, and you forget to actually check your blood sugar. And because we see that with dehydration and everything going on with summer and summer foods, it's more fun. And it's kind of like, okay, caution to the wind kind of element. And people do forget. Had a patient traveling in Europe, same kind of thing, forgot to check sugars, didn't check sugars, all of a sudden sugars are sky high. But we knew that that's because this patient had forgotten, wasn't dosing their insulin correctly, and that's because they're on holiday, they're traveling. People forget. Don't forget to check your sugar. Please check your sugar. It's absolutely critical. It's an objective measure of what the blood sugar is in the capillary bed. It's not exactly the same as what's going on in the body, but it's really important as a heads up. And by the way, when you get that check, guess what? If it's high or if it's low, it can go both ways. That's the thing. But if it's high, you really know, okay, call your doctor. No matter where you are, no matter who is taking care of you, call your doctor, call your nurse. Find out, what do I do? How do I change this? Is it a diet or exercise change? And you can implement that in a day. You can change everything in a day.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay.
Okay. Number six. This is sounds awful for summer diabetics. Avoid fruits. Fruit.
Really? See, I thought fruit and the delivery system of the sugar in the fiber was different than juice.
It So you're talking more like glycemic index and so forth.
Yeah.
But guess what? Yeah, you're right. You are right. There is an element of fiber that causes slowing of that sugar absorption. But the problem is, Jillian, it's sugar. It's sugar in a nice, like, in a nice fiber wrap. That's what fruit is.
Wow.
So when I say avoid fruits, I want to also clarify it. Berries, raspberries, blackberries, and blueberries, these are probably the lowest in sugar content and highest in antioxidants. And the good thing is that the berries are really plentiful in summer and less expensive, because we know berries are expensive, right?
Right.
But berries are probably your best. Then we start looking at things like some of the melons, like a honeydew melon, a cantaloupe. We look at things like nectarines and apricots and peaches. Those are lower in sugars. The things that you have to be a little bit careful about are all the tropical fruits, including, obviously, pineapple, pomegranate, mango. Oh, my gosh, you got to be careful with that. Really high in sugar content. And the last thing, which is interesting, because a lot of people like trail mix, which I love as well.
Right.
But dried fruits are
terrible.
Stinkers.
Yep. Terrible.
You're better. I mean, can you imagine? In a dried fruit, think about it. You can eat, what, within a minute? Figs, apricots, dates, and raisins, and you have about 500 to 600 calories in one handful.
Wow.
No, but they're so damn good.
I know. They're delicious, right?
Wow.
And we love it. So yeah. Know it for what it's worth, and that is be very careful. Always think of fruit as a dessert. That's what I tell people.
Wow.
Always think of it as a dessert, especially if you're a diabetic. Okay. Because
yeah.
you just can't process that glucose load. Is it better? You're right, Jillian.
I'm taking all my contestants off fruit then.
Well,
I am. I'm taking them off of it.
Well, I mean, be careful. I mean, because it's good to have the fiber. We love that.
But they're getting tons of veggies. So
well, veggies are our friends.
I've been debating this whole fruit thing for years because you're like, well, it's still fructose and this and that and the other. And then I'm like, well, there's the fiber, because then I'll have a conversation with one nutritionist and she's like, well, the fiber makes a different delivery system. And
if you eat a couple of slices of watermelon, guess what you're getting? A high sugar.
Jesus. See, I was like, well, it's only 17 calories and it's got potassium in it. So, okay.
When I said avoid fruits, I'm a fruit lover myself, but even I, like, it's sugar, so
got
think
it.
About it as a dessert.
Okay, so, got it. Right, so then just very, right, it
yeah,
should,
just,
yeah,
it's
from a metabolic perspective,
it would have,
got it, okay.
It's a treat. And
got
by
it.
The way, vegetables, which you brought up, oh my gosh, all the summer squash, all the vegetables, they have carbs in them too, some have sugars, but my goodness, vegetables are your friend.
Right, okay, got
Last
it.
Last one, number seven, sunshine. So that's our really important...
Because this is vitamin D, right?
Absolutely. Now, I say it with some caveats, but it's important to get outside. And what we've seen is, despite all the sunshine people get, there still is low vitamin D. So sunshine means...
How is this possible?
I know. Unbelievable, right? Because the sun goes to our skin. We make one form of vitamin D. It then goes to the liver, gets converted, goes to the kidney, and then we get our activated vitamin D. Vitamin D is an essential hormone. We think it lowers cancer risk,
right.
It lowers cholesterol, cardiovascular risk, and for certain, helps our bone density and absorption of calcium.
Wow.
So when I say sunshine, it's not just going in the sun, because we want people protected. We don't want them baking more than 20 minutes or 30 minutes, by the way, per day in direct sunlight. But we think that it does help to be outdoors, even with your cap and your long sleeve shirt or whatever, at the beach with your bodyguards and all those things that people put on their shirts. It actually seems to make a difference to have the sunshine in terms of raising vitamin D. But second point, take vitamin D. Make sure that somebody is checking your level of 25-hydroxy, we call it, 25-OH, the activated vitamin D level in your blood. And I think it's absolutely critical, especially in diabetes, which is a cardiovascular disease. It's a heart and vessel disease. That's what diabetes is. High sugar clogs arteries, causes strokes, heart attacks, amputations.
Oh my God.
We cannot get blood flow to our different organs, including the heart and the brain. And that's why diabetes is devastating.
Can I ask you, Dr. V, because I've been reading about a lot about heart disease, and a lot of the current research is saying things like, it isn't red meat that's causing heart disease. It's, you know, the white sugars and the white flours. Is this why?
Well, I still think red meat is part of it.
Okay. So you still think the saturated fat, it can play a part.
Yeah, red meat is delicious. Why is it delicious? Because it's got fat in it.
Okay.
Fat is so palatable, meaning that our taste buds have this reason that, when we don't know exactly why, that they love, our taste buds really respond to fats. That's why potato chips, all these, you know, all fried foods.
Got it.
It's so comforting. So red meat.
That's a good word for it.
It really is.
Fat, it is comforting, yeah.
Fat is so comforting. So obviously there's a reason for it. And teleologically, meaning going back in evolution, right, Jill?
Yeah.
That fats were how you survived, right?
Yeah.
So you needed them. But guess what? We've got food all over. I mean, I bet you can turn a corner right now. I bet there's food right in front of you somewhere.
I have an iced Americano, and Autumn picked me up some food that's actually in the refrigerator right now.
Right. Okay. So that's where we are. Isn't it wonderful? Best of worlds, worst of worlds.
Okay.
So we don't have to be active anymore to have a plethora, a huge amount of food in front of us all the time.
Right.
All the time.
Right.
Like when you go to meetings, and I go to my business meetings, as I'm sure you do, and our clinical meetings, there's always snacks everywhere. There's candies, there's snacks. It's like feed. Soccer. Snack.
Yeah.
You know, all the kids stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
You don't need to eat that much.
Right.
But you need to eat.
Got it.
So sunshine, and we're backing all the way back, but sunshine is the last one because it's important to get out.
Okay.
Sunshine has two folds. Get out. It makes you exercise. You do need some sun, about 20 to 30 minutes a day.
Okay.
Also, it's really important for vitamin D. It reminds us, wow, okay, if I haven't been getting out, I need to make sure I especially check my vitamin D level. So those are my top seven for diabetes in summer.
Dr. V, thank you so much. As always, you're informative, inspirational, and entertaining. So thank you.
Janice and Jillian, this is always my pleasure. And to everyone listening, I mean, you've got such a great group of folks. And, you know, thank you.
Dr. V, holy cow. I know you're super busy and you might not be taking clients, but I always forget to do this. Where can people reach you?
It's Dr. Van Hurley, DrVanHerle.com.
Got it. Thank you. Dr. V, thank you so much, buddy.
No worries. And be well, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
God, she always rocks my world.
Listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.